Hey friends, I'm Ashley.
Hey you guys,
I'm Lainey.
And this is Haunted Real Estate. Okay, so we're back in Appalachia. And I'm just going to go ahead and say, I hear it, and I'm pretty sure I said this last time we were in the region, was Appalachia. I think if you're there, it's Appalachia. That's how I hear it, especially when I watch like YouTube videos of like these ghost stories and stuff.
Yeah.
They usually say Appalachia, so I'm going to go with that. But, you know, if I'm ever saying it wrong, I don't mean to.
Don't just say anything
different,
about it.
Different diet. Well, it's hard to not say anything about it when that's the main topic.
I met the people out there.
Okay. We try, but you know, different dialects, different regions. So yeah, I really wanted to come back to the Appalachian area because you guys have a lot of great spooky tales. And I also wanted to acknowledge the fact that I saw this on Reddit. I don't know if it offends you when people like to talk about the spooky things there, because there's so many TikTok videos and stuff like that that come out and they're like, I hate that you guys are painting our region like this. Obviously, I don't want to do that if that's offensive to people. Yeah. But like personally, I would like if our area was more spooky and had cryptids and legends, and you know, it's like so steeped in folklore, but I think it's so steeped in folklore specifically because of one, the Native Americans that were there, and they shared a lot of their folklore with the Irish and Scottish settlers that came there, and they're known storytellers and they have lots of stories from their own land with like fairies and stuff like that that they brought here. So my perspective is the area has a lot of great storytellers and a lot of great legends and folklore, and I'm not passing everything off as fact because it's folklore, like it might have been rooted somewhere. So I'm just gonna acknowledge if that's something that upsets you, certainly don't mean to, but it's also like a lot of people like hearing your stories, so you know, I don't know what to say about that.
I don't either.
But I saw it on Reddit today and I was like, wait, should I not talk today? Or is this like, two people that are annoyed by this? I don't know.
I think it's like anything, like politics. You know, some people are going to love it. Some people are going to hate it.
Well, and like somebody was like, because it's like, why does everybody lock their doors in Appalachia? And like, for me, I'm like, seriously, shouldn't everybody lock their doors?
Yeah.
But,
we're,
you know,
at that time period now where you should just lock your doors.
Yeah. But they're like, oh, in Appalachia, you know, they lock their doors because of the cryptids and the Mothman that's going to come in. And then somebody commented, it was like, no, it's because of the meth heads we don't want coming in our house in the middle of the night. Like, sure. Nobody wants any of those things. So why, like, just lock your door. That's not something that's special to this region. So anyway, we're primarily going to be in the Great Smoky Mountains area today. And it was previously home to Cherokee Native Americans. And then, as I alluded to before, it was settled by Scottish and Irish settlers. That's our settlers.
Settlers.
You said it perfect. I said settlers.
You should be more like me.
Okay.
I would say nothing right.
This region is breathtaking, just a gorgeous landscape. So the Great Smoky Mountains is primarily in Tennessee and North Carolina. And so that's where
I thought you were going to describe the beautiful landscape. I was like getting ready, like, ah, and then you just went on.
Well, I can't really paint a great picture that's not going to be like, just look at a freaking picture. So if you would like to pull that up on your phone so that you can see, that's fine. I don't think I'm going to paint it for you and like it's going to be seeing it.
All right.
There's mountains and trees. No,
you're and terrible at it.
Misty.
It's very misty, it's guys. Misty.
So a little backstory here on the Great Smoky Mountains region. Cherokees inhabited the land for thousands of years, and the Cherokees are a branch of the Iroquois Nation. These Native Americans worked the land, which allowed them to have their permanent settlement and created homes. They created homes there. So they weren't nomadic like a lot of people think of Native Americans. I mean, not all Native Americans are nomadic. Many live near fertile rivers so that they could farm, which is also pretty cool that Cherokees were matriarchal. So children took the name of the mother and women were treated as equals. So I don't know why it took like hundreds of years for European settlers to get with the program, but it did. It took a while. Irish and Scottish settlers, I can't even say those two close together, started coming in around the 1700s. They established permanent settlements, and then since then, they have been deeply ingrained into the Appalachian culture. Now, we know American history, by and large, was unkind to Native Americans. What's kind of cool about this region, at least for a while, because there is always going to be some turmoil there, but it was known for a long time to be more peaceful in the United States as far as the Irish and Scottish settlers went and the Native Americans and how they treated each other. So they had more in common, I think, which is what helps them get along. Their exchanges were known to be less violent and hostile than many other instances in the United States. So both groups, the Irish and Scottish settlers and Native Americans, lived in clans or groups. Irish and Scottish, oh my God, I can't say it together. Scottish settlers also have experienced displacement in their own homelands. There were even a lot of intermarriages between tribes of Cherokees and clans of Irish and Scottish people. And they traded quite often with one another. So, of course, what ended up happening is time went on, the U.S. government led by example on how to treat the Native Americans, and that relationship did start to go rocky. And I'm sure what doesn't help too is that European settlers, they come here and then generations start passing where you start to forget your own history from your own ancestral lands. You start to feel like this is your native home, you know, so you feel as time went on, they probably felt like they had less common with Native Americans than the original settlers that came here. So now Scottish and Irish people are known to have great storytelling abilities. We love you guys for that. And as we said, Native Americans and Irish Scottish settlers pass down oral history. They both have done that. So as the legends grew, dense forests, vast landscapes, there was a lot of unexplained phenomena. And the people of this region passed down tales through the generations. So we're going to talk about some of the legends and spookiness of Appalachia today. And our first legend is the Cherokee legend of Spearfinger. So now many Native American legends have shapeshifters. So Spearfinger was a Cherokee
finger.
What?
A shapeshifter finger, giant finger coming after people in the night.
No, are you just trying to guess what this is?
Yes, because I've never heard of it.
I'll tell you. Let me get there. I'm going to follow your weird train of thought. So she was a Cherokee witch that had the ability to shapeshift. So you could easily be lured in the woods by her or wherever because she could look like a friend or family. So she could shapeshift and look like somebody that you know.
So she could be you in the woods.
Yeah, she could.
Saying Lainey with her creepy finger.
Yes.
That's scary.
So she was a really old, evil woman that would attack anywhere from villages. She'd attack children, hunters. Her easiest prey would be someone wandering off from a group, which could often be children. So this is likely why most legends have children in them. People can explain this as it's a legend to teach kids to not wander off. Some believe her to be a monster and others an evil witch. I don't know what words I was trying to say. So you can decide for yourself. But if you came across her path, you could be a victim. So now, while this is a legend, many people believe that there's truth somewhere in the tale, but we'll likely never know what that is. So Spearfinger lived high up in the Appalachian Mountains. She's commonly called Spearfinger. Here you go. Because
here we go.
Her right index or pointer finger is long and almost obsidian-like, so like black stone-like finger.
I knew it was the pointer finger.
It always is, right? Like, you're not going to have like a really long thumb. That's just not that intimidating.
Or a long pinky.
I'd be like, hey, long thumb. I don't think so. Sorry, I just thought of a story. My daughter, she was showing me her middle finger and how long it was. So she's like, I'm not flipping you off, but like, look how long my middle finger is. And then she was like, people even called me in middle school, like long middle finger. I'm like, that was your nickname, long middle finger. I don't think so.
Long middle finger. I'm going to call her that after this.
Yeah.
Is it really long or is
it is long, like, but like people made fun of mine that was long, but I think it's just the way that I would like use my middle finger.
What's with kids making fun of middle fingers?
I don't know.
That's weird. Mine's average size.
It is average.
It's not much longer than my others, but just a pinch.
Yeah. So, yes, this was a long obsidian-like pointer finger. It was impenetrable by spears, making her, her skin was, very difficult to maim her at all. So now, supposedly, she had been attacking Cherokees for a long time. Every time they tried to shoot her with an arrow, it was unsuccessful. She seemed indestructible. It was later discovered that her heart was not where our heart is, in our chest. It was in the palm of her hand, protected by her long fingers. Okay. Her favorite disguise was that of an old woman. So that's how she was often walking around.
What's this lady's name again?
Spearfinger.
Does she have another name or is that it?
That's the only thing I see her go by.
Ingrid.
You're gonna be like Janet?
I was going for Ingrid.
Oh, okay. So her heart was in the palm of her hand, protected by her long fingers. Her favorite disguise was that of an old woman, which is probably why most people think she's a witch. She just kind of has the stereotypical kind of witch look. But I'm not sure if we know her true form. So all depictions I saw her, she was a creepy old lady with at least one long finger.
That lady.
She's not creepy. She's pretty.
Oh.
I mean, you can't see her face, but you're kind of assuming she's pretty.
Yeah.
Lainey pointed to the witch picture that I have in the office. So due to the fact that the Cherokees were matriarchal, it wasn't hard for her to quickly gain the trust of her victims, but her easiest targets were children. So she would stroke their hair and sing to them until they fell asleep in her arms, and then she would take her pointer spear finger and quickly cut out their liver. Yeah, so she would cut out their liver.
Why
of her
the
victim.
Liver? Is she an alcoholic and she needs a new liver?
I don't know if she's an alcoholic, but I think that was just her favorite thing to eat.
Okay.
You know, like we all like our different body parts more than others, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So during the fall, this is when she attacked most frequently due to the fact that Cherokees burnt leaf piles to get chestnuts that they were trying to accumulate before the winter months. So the smoke attracted her attention. And for Cherokees, it was like ringing the dinner bell. She would see the smoke from those burn piles and she would come and attack. So her attacks became more and more frequent to the point where multiple tribes came together to figure out how to forever get rid of the forest of Spearfinger. So now they were on to the fact that smoke is what usually alerted her to activity. So they used this knowledge to now lure Spearfinger to them. So they lit a pile of leaves on fire and waited. And it didn't take long for this feeble old lady to appear out of the woods, wrapped in blankets, covering her hands. Now she was calling out to them for help. Now, of course, like some were confused by this because they're like, it's not what they were expecting. Some like unassuming old lady coming out like all haggard in blankets. And so some were very hesitant to do anything.
Because she a witch.
Yeah, exactly. She's some kind of witch or something. So some were like, is this our girl? And doubt crossed their minds because, like I said, this could genuinely be a feeble old lady who happened to just come out of the forest at the same time. But the medicine man that was with them saw this act and shot his arrow first at her. And then the rest of the men were like, oh, okay, he knows something we don't know. So
let's shoot her.
Let's shoot her. So the rest of the men followed suit and then she revealed herself and came charging at the group. So none of the arrows could pierce her skin. It was just like bouncing right off. So birds started flying down off the mountain and they were like, heart, heart, heart. That's how I imagined it sounded. And of course, the men assumed that her heart was in her chest. So they start going after her chest and start trying to shoot all their spears there. Then one brave little bird landed on that gigantic right pointer finger, drawing the attention to her finger. And the men took this as a sign, shoot her hand instead of her chest. So one warrior shot his arrow at her wrist, severing her wrist from her hand, allowing her hand to fall with the exposed heart in it. And that's where they were like, I see, that's where her heart was the whole time. So the warriors took notice of this and all pointed their arrows at her heart. After her heart was pierced, she fell to the ground and in one twitch, she was dead. So her wrath on the villages and children were over. And to the Cherokee, this story was very real to many of them. But to many, this is just a legend to keep children from wandering into the woods.
There's always so many legends to keep children from the woods.
I know.
So creepy.
We think about the crazy things. We talked about that like with Krampus. We're like, all these legends and all these different cultures that are supposed to teach children to behave, listen to your parents, be obedient. And you're like, we're all supposed to be in therapy as well. What that is.
Yeah, for sure. I don't want to dream about Spearfinger.
Yeah. So some people believe she still haunts the forest today. So that is the story or the legend of Spearfinger.
Well, that was a new one for me. I've never heard it. I like it. I dig it. Kids, don't go into the woods.
Yeah, that's just good, a general PSA for everybody. So the next one are the Brown Mountain Lights. Now, this is just a weird phenomenon. I don't have an explanation to you as to what it is.
What is it?
Okay. Like, did I not say that out loud? Mysterious lights have been appearing around North Carolina's Linville Gorge in the Brown Mountain region. This place is steeped in mystery and legend. For centuries, eerie lights have danced across the rugged slopes, just defying explanation and just like really, you know, like igniting people's imaginations. So the Cherokee Native Americans have a legend to explain the phenomenon. They said, long ago, around 1200 AD, a brutal battle raged between the Cherokees and the Cutaba. Those are two different tribes in that mountain region. When the battle is over, the dust settles, you know, all you could basically hear left were kind of wounded warriors. The women or wives of these warriors came down from the hills with, some stories say lanterns, I'm like thinking torches for lights is really what it is.
Yeah.
Some kind of light, searching endlessly for their fallen warriors to see, you know, hopefully save them, heal the wound, whatever it is, but they're looking for their fallen warriors and most of them were dead. So it's said that these spectral maidens are still searching and the flickering lights is kind of the residual energy that you're seeing from them holding the torches or lanterns, whatever you think it was, haunting the night, looking endlessly for their men. So that's the legend through the year. Again, that was 1200. So you're talking like 800 to 900 years that this has been a thing. So through the years, many have sought to unravel the riddle of the lights and literally every theory has crumbled. So in 1771, okay, 1700s, they're trying to figure out what are these freaking lights. One German scientist claimed that the lights were nothing more than inflamed nitrous vapors rising from the earth.
It's 1700s, he said that?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that was cast aside because that was not accurate.
Blasphemy.
So that's 1771. So this is a long time. So then in 1913, the U.S. Geological Survey declared that the lights were just locomotive lights, just people driving around the mountains. That doesn't explain what happened in the 1700s, the 1200s, and the hundreds of years since then. But in 1913, they were like, that is just locomotive lights. But there were some floodwaters that swept away the railroad tracks. And so there's not an option for that to be any kind of locomotive lights at all.
Got it.
So when they kept seeing these orbs just floating around from a distance, they were like, okay, well, that theory's dead. So by the early 1900s, they start talking about like extraterrestrial visitors coming here. The Argosy, which was a popular pulp magazine, urged readers to witness UFOs at the Brown Mountain for themselves. So there's a lot of people that have pointed out that they believe it's aliens. The light takes many forms. They've appeared as hues of white, red, yellow, orange, and blue. And they've been described from tiny to flickering candles to enormous to fiery bulbs. Orbs. Some cling low to the ground while others rise high into the sky as if it's like rising up to the stars. Their unearthly allure inspired bluegrass musician Scotty Wiseman to immortalize them in a song called Legend of the Brown Mountain Lights. And even National Geographic hailed the site as one of the three best places in the world to experience a natural wonder.
Interesting. Where is it located? What state?
This is primarily in North Carolina.
Okay. I've never heard of that either.
Yeah.
Just full of new facts for me today.
Yay. So at a symposium that had both skeptics and believers alike hoping to finally try and figure out what this strange phenomenon was, two experts, one was a paranormal investigator, Joshua Warren, and physics professor Daniel Caton of Appalachian, that was a different way I decided to say it, Appalachian State University, spent hours debating as to what this was, science versus supernatural. There was no answer. There was just an argument of some believe that their science can explain. Obviously, some people believe science can explain it, but science hasn't explained it. And so that's why people are deferring to it's got to be supernatural.
Well, it's wild that it's documented that it's lasted beyond 1771.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are you going to say it's anything that has recently come up?
Yeah.
Like, that's ridiculous.
Because for sure you can point out the fact that it's been 300 years and we have not figured out what it is. So.
Yeah.
Or almost 300 years.
Well, we probably won't. And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah. So Joshua Warren has had a lifelong lifelong fascination. He actually became familiar with this phenomenon when he was on a childhood camping trip to Brown Mountain. And he witnessed the orbs and thought of them as very like ghost-like, going through the trees and vanishing into the night. You know, it kind of reminds me of like the Scottish or golly, is it Scottish or Irish? The wisps.
No? I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, shoot. Hang on.
Is it like the Northern Lights?
Nope.
Okay.
Not at all. Okay. Will of the Wisp is a ghostly light that appears in folklore as fairy, ghost, or elemental spirit. And it's common in, it's Scottish or Irish. So that just kind of makes you wonder, like with the region that it's in, where does it come from? Oh, folklore of Scotland. Yeah. Will of the Wisps.
Interesting. So do like, you think the Scottish brought it over or...
They could have. I mean, if you're talking about, I mean, of course, it goes back to Cherokee legend. So obviously, if it really is as old as the Cherokees, well before the Scottish came, then no.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about the 1700s when the Scottish and Irish settlers were here, then yeah, could be.
Interesting.
Will of the Wisps in Scottish folklore is depicted either as mischievous spirits, typically fairies. So the Scottish folklore, Will of the Wisps are variously depicted either as mischievous spirits, typically fairies, or even the ghosts of the dead, eager to lead travelers off their path and into their death. The lights typically appear close to a bog, marsh, or swamp, places where straying off the beaten path can become dangerous or even deadly. Yeah. So that's kind of what these remind me of.
Yeah.
Like that makes sense. When I was reading about it, I was thinking Will of the Wisps. So, what's his name? Josh
Harnett.
Warren. Oh my gosh. Joshua Warren. So like I said, ever since he was a kid, he's been camping in this area. And that's when he first saw this with his very own eyes.
And he's not related to Ed and Lorraine Warren?
No, I would say Warren's a pretty common last name. So it's not just assume. So he returned as an adult with equipment and he was ready to explain these orbs to people. But there has been no explanation and the mystery really still persists. One tale chilling in its detail comes from 1982 with the overlook on Highway 181. Morganton resident Tommy Hunter peered over the edge and saw a ball of light hovering in the air. Unable to resist, he reached out and touched it, and Tommy described the sensation as if he had thrust his finger into a live electrical socket.
So he lived to tell the tale, at least?
He did, and he had six witnesses that all swore that he was telling the truth.
Okay.
So what are these lights? Are they lanterns of grieving spirits? The remnants of an ancient battle, or is it something otherworldly? So Joshua Wharton and Professor Caton agree on one thing. The question is no longer whether the lights are real or not, because they are, but for now, they remain one of North Carolina's most enduring mysteries. A spectral dance of fire and shadow that invites all who dare to gaze into the unknown.
That is beautiful.
So the last tale today is a ghost story.
Sorry, it started coming out and I was like, just go with it.
Just do it. Okay, so this one is from Cade's Cove in Great Smoky Mountains. This is known as the cussing cover.
What?
So long before the Great Smoky Mountains became a national park, many families lived in Cade's Cove. Mavis and either Basil or Basil. Okay, I know some pronounce it Basil and some Basil. I'm going to say Basil because that's the more American way to say it. Could have been pronounced something different.
I'll say it Basil for you guys if I ever need to say the name.
So Mavis and Basil were married. They were a married couple living in the middle of Cade's Cove in a two-bedroom log cabin with their two children. Two daughters, actually. They lived near a stream and it was just country living at its finest. So the wife, Mavis, had maybe this irrational fear. She was petrified at the thought of being struck by lightning. So the legend says that she was born during a thunderstorm and she believed she was destined to die by the strike of a lightning bolt.
That sucks to live your life thinking any moment if there's a storm, you're going to be struck down.
I know. Like if you think you know how you're going to die, then you know any position you get put in where that scenario is a possibility, you're like preventing it from happening. Exactly. And that's why I think we don't need to know these things. Like, I don't need to know how I'm going to go.
And what's Basil doing to help you?
He's not. I mean, I'm not saying he's a bad guy. I don't really know, but he wasn't. So she lived with this fear her entire life that her fate that this was her fate and that every storm throughout her life, she was just paralyzed with fear. So because this fear plagued her life, she never went out during a storm and she refused to use anything metal during a storm. She refused to even have a metal bed frame in her house because she didn't want to attract that lightning.
That girl needs some therapy.
So like I said, she also refused to touch metal during thunderstorms, which might seem like it's not that big of a deal, but
I can see it. I get a little freaked out.
Yeah, she was, but she was a quilt maker. And so a lot of her needles were made of metal. And so she couldn't sew, which was one of her favorite things to do during a storm. And like, you're also stuck inside in a time of like no TV. So that's a little bit difficult.
I mean, I feel like she's going to die by being struck by lightning. So,
well, then you might be surprised.
Okay.
Actually, lightning's not even in the story at all. Oh. I'm just kidding. It is, but not in the way that you think.
It's Basil.
So one of Mavis's favorite quilts she made was from a piece using pieces of her husband's flannel shirt. It was particularly a red flannel shirt that she had a very fond memory of. So Basil had been wearing that shirt during their first fight as a married couple where he had been cussing. And so she thought it was a funny memory. And so that's the shirt she used to make this quilt. And so she called it the cussing cover.
That's so cute.
Now there's some different versions to this, but whatever happened next, Mavis got gravely ill. And so she was essentially on her deathbed. And so since she felt like she was going to die, she asked her husband to make two promises to her. Number one, to never sell her quilts. And two,
never get with another woman.
Never allow her quilts on a metal bed frame. Since those were pretty fair requests, her husband promised her those things and then Mavis passed away.
Aww.
About a year later, Basil ended up marrying another Cades Cove resident, Truly Lawson.
Yeah. What time is this?
I actually don't know what time period is. Hang on.
I mean, a year isn't that long in the past, but if it was now, it's, I think, a little frowned upon. But who knows? I'm not married.
I think it was a lonely time.
Yeah.
I don't know what time period this is. Like, nothing I could find said it.
That's fine. It's a legend.
Yeah, nothing says, like, in 1805. Like, I really don't know. Okay. But they don't make it like it's a modern day story. So he ended up marrying, like I said, about a year later to Truly Lawson, who was much younger. Once they were married, Truly did not like the smaller wooden bed and begged Basil for a larger bed that would be a metal frame. Since Basil's really good at keeping his word, he told her she could get a metal frame, which is already he knows that his former wife did not want that.
Cursing him from above. Yes.
But she did specifically say, don't put her quilts on a metal frame. But if you're inviting in the metal frame, then kind of like you're already setting yourself up for not keeping this promise. So one very cold night, Truly asked if she could use one of the quilts that Mavis had made on the bed that night. And being the idiot that Basil was and going against the promise he made to his first wife, he said it would be okay if she put one of Mavis's quilts on the metal bed. Literally exactly what Mavis asked him not to do, he did. That candle turned on behind you and that was really weird. I guess it's on the timer. It just suddenly started flickering out of nowhere.
Scary.
Silly man. So, of course, the quilt she chose was Mavis's very special cussing cover. Since it was made mostly of flannel, it would keep them warm on this cold night. So the couple drifted off to sleep, all nice and warm and cozy now. Suddenly, Truly woke up in the middle of the night and saw Mavis standing at the foot of the bed. Mavis was just staring at her. And I know it's that scary stare.
Yeah.
And they locked eyes and she just stared at her for a few and then let out a petrifying scream.
Scary.
And then was gone. And Truly, in turn, screamed herself, which woke Basil out of his sleep.
Does she even know what the ex-wife looks like? Because we don't know what time period this is. So did she just see a random woman like...
She's probably been disturbed. She might have known who she was. She's a Cades Cove resident. So she probably knew her.
Got it.
So Truly screamed. Basil woke up out of his sleep. Basil tried calming her, was like, that had to just be a dream. There's no way Mavis was standing at the foot of the bed, right? Like men do.
Totally.
Totally wasn't real. I'm not going to lie. I'd be really freaked out if I were remarried and my new husband was like, I just saw your husband standing at the foot of the bed. Like, I would take that seriously.
I think I would totally take that
seriously. I wouldn't be like, I'm sorry, you were dreaming. I'd be like, cool.
Let's go into therapy together and try to maybe conjure her up again and see what she wants. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about conjuring her up, but I'm doing some Palo Santo. I'm going to say some words. I'm not just going to let that go. And I'm for sure not just falling right back to sleep. So eventually they do fall back to sleep. She's like, okay, sure. I was just dreaming. Within a couple of hours, a bolt of lightning struck down on the bed, knocking Truly out of the bed. And when she came to and stood up, she found Basil burnt to a crisp. Just a pile of ash, basically.
Oh, damn.
But nothing else was burnt, not even the cussing cover. So everything was in completely normal condition, except Basil being a pretty much a pile of ash.
I think his wife just wanted him back and come to her.
She, like, you couldn't keep the one freaking, like, one of two promises that you gave me.
Now you're stuck with me.
So the next day, she had come to realize there was not a storm that night. It was just a single bolt of lightning.
That's so scary.
So after his death, Truly did not want to so much as touch Mavis's quilts at that point.
No shit.
So she gave them to Basil's daughters, which was also Mavis's kids, and then sold the rest to a collector. And legend says that the cussing cover is still out there somewhere today. It's either been passed down or was sold to a collector, and it could be sitting in an antique shop. It could be sitting in your living room right now.
Interesting.
Not yours, but like one of our listeners, it could be sitting in your living room right now.
That'd be amazing if I went home and there was a random flannel blanket in my living room.
Yeah. Hey, Mavis. I like the name Mavis, too. So if you have an old quilt with some red flannel on it, you may be holding the cussing cover of Mavis Estep.
Dang.
But yeah, those are our little tales today of Appalachia or Appalachia. I'm still not done with this region, but that's the time I had to give to a couple of stories.
I loved each and every one of them. I've never heard of any of them.
Well, good.
So this has been fun for me.
And hopefully I didn't upset anybody that is done hearing about the folklore. I felt like these were a little off the beaten path kind of ones that I didn't really know about either. So if you guys have any recommendations of interesting real estate stories, or you have an episode recommendation, send that over to hauntedrepod@gmail.com. Go follow us on Instagram if you haven't already at haunted.real.estate. And please, if you could rate and review us on your preferred platform, that would be amazing. Help us get more listeners. And yeah, anything you wanted to say, Lainey?
I was just gonna say, we love listeners.
Okay.
And we hope you keep listening.
Yes, keep listening, keep coming back. We're sticking to at least our 2 episodes a month, like we said, so I'm gonna try and keep that promise. But we do need more episode ideas, because I'm not gonna lie to you, that's the hardest thing for me. I don't mind sitting down and doing research, but when you, like, I am the type of person that, like, I stare at the computer and I'm like, I don't know words or things
to
look up.
That's how I am. I start looking at, like, 10 different stories. I'm like, none of these are worth giving to other people unless I can find something cool. So
We have to find more information, but yeah. So keep listening. We'll be here with you guys. Have an amazing week. Stay warm. We just got out of a snowpocalypse here in Houston.
We sure did. Now we're going to go into a monsoon season.
I know. What is that? Like, yeah, you said there's a storm coming in the morning?
Yeah, it's going to storm heavily tomorrow and I think Monday, but it's raining all through the week.
Okay.
So that's fun. My dog's going to go potty inside when I'm at work.
Cool, cool.
Great.
Okay. Well, y'all stay dry out there.
Stay dry.